Welcome to the Making Strides for Animal Chiropractic podcast. This is Dr. Katie, and I'm so happy to provide a resource for you as a practicing animal chiropractor about the business and clinical side of being an animal chiropractic provider. I'm so thankful to have you on this podcast listening to these resources because I knew personally when I started my business, I felt so alone and so isolated. I don't want anyone else to feel like that. So in this podcast, we go over specific resources tailored to you as an animal chiropractor, so that way you can serve more animal patients sooner. I invite you to get involved with us. We're online on social media. We have a Facebook group by the name of Making Strides for Animal Chiropractic that is growing every day. We also have an Instagram and Facebook page, Making Strides for Animal Chiro, where you can get involved and say hi. Please drop me a message. I'd love to hear from you. And if you'd like more course material, specific and tactical things you can use to get your business started the right way, please look us up online at makingstridesforanimalchiropractic.com. I have a lot of specific material I've designed just for you as a practicing animal chiropractor to get you to be more successful. I hope you enjoy this podcast. Please reach out, and I look forward to helping you serve more animal patients. Hey guys, it's Dr. Katie with Making Strides for Animal Chiropractic. In this podcast today, I just want to let you know the ABCA conference is coming up in less than 2 weeks, and I am anxious to share my information with you. Excited and anxious, I think, go together. Nervous, more so. But I'll be talking at the very last spot on Sunday. Hopefully you stick around to hear my two-part presentation about musculoskeletal compensation patterns in canine patients. And if you aren't able to stick around, that's okay. I will be recording myself outside of the conference in preparation too, but I'm going to be recording myself so that way anyone that can't be there and still wants the information can access it for a limited time. So that way you can share the information and basically get some clinical pearls because believe it or not, I actually do treat patients and I actually been doing it for a while, quite successfully, I think. And I just have a lot of information that I want to share. And I just wanted to use this podcast today to really talk about the why I chose the topic that I did and why I submitted it. Because, you know, it wasn't the first thing that I wanted to talk about. Of course, you know, I have this podcast and I talked about business and that was kind of the first thing that I submitted. But I also submitted this talk and this was the one that was approved. And I think it's important information to talk about because many of us, when we're starting our animal practice, you know, we just default into what we learned at school. And that's no fault to, you know, anyone that, you know, we were trained a certain way and we do that. But everything I create, all the courses I talked about in my last podcast that I'm coming up with, everything that I create is basically training wheels, the fundamentals. Like, here is what you need to know before you start practicing and opening a business. Like, everything I talk about is uniquely catered to the student of animal chiropractic as you start to open and grow your business. And sure, like a seasoned professional, as they're growing their business, can still benefit from going back over the basics and the fundamentals. But most of my content is like, here's really what you need to know, in my opinion. Here's the gaps. Here's what was missing, or here's what I personally felt was missing. And I originally started this podcast in my Facebook group and like all of my materials because I was teaching at an animal chiropractic program. And I just felt like there is so much beyond that program that needed to be included. And everything that I'm putting together nowadays is basically me trying to serve that void and make it not as big. So that way, when you get out into practice, you're more successful and able to serve patients to the best of your ability. And hopefully able to run a business in an authentic way, because many of us, we get, you know, analysis paralysis or imposter syndrome or, you know, whatever you want to call it. It's hard opening a business and it's hard being a clinician for maybe a skill that you've never worked with before. You know, maybe you're a veterinarian and you've never done a hands-on modality before. So it can be scary, right? But as a professional who is working to help other professionals, I chose the topic that I did because it's all about a systematic approach. And a systematic approach, you know, a lot of people think chiropractors feel bones that are stuck out of place and then they go and adjust and then wham, bam, thank you, ma'am, you're done, right? And that's not how it goes. There's actually a science to this. There's a philosophy to this. And when I have a systematic approach, when I'm taking care of a patient, the relationship starts before I ever even touch a patient. So the whole goal of my presentation at the ABCA conference this year is, okay, here's what we need to observe before we ever touch a patient. Here's the information we need to know before we go and evaluate these certain structures. Because many of us don't even know where the muscles are that attach to these bones. We don't know the anatomy of these areas. So, you know, in certain conditions, there are certain areas that are going to be painful, right? And they happen regularly in the same spots. And then when we're observing our patients, we're watching them walk, or we're, you know, observing how their posture is, we can infer and be more efficient with our motion palpation if we would just notice, huh, they're walking that way, they're standing this way, they're having difficulty sitting or laying down. That might mean that this structure is compromised, and using your mind's eye to say, okay, what do I know about that structure? What attaches there that I need to check beyond just, you know, touching everything, motion palpating everything, and guessing and adjusting, right? So our systematic evaluation is going to be comprised of evaluating, what does an animal's gait look like? What does their posture look like? What are their behaviors? What are they doing that's not normal? Like, there should be a systematic way that you do a gait evaluation. I'm looking for these 5 to 10 things, and I'm checking off, no, I'm not seeing that. No, I'm not seeing that. Ooh, that area looks problematic. Or they're repeatedly doing this thing. Hopefully you do it in a certain way where you take a slow motion camera and you're recording them at a walk and a trot. You're showing the owner, look, this is improving. We have objective measurements, you know, such as a gait eval to help us measure if the chiropractic adjustment is helping. And then beyond that, when we start to go into the anatomy and we're thinking, okay, I'm seeing that this dog is repeatedly circumducting through the right hip, is sitting sloppy with that right leg out. That's something that when I start to evaluate, I'm thinking of the anatomy. That's something where strategically the pelvis, the hip, and the knee are something I'm going to want to evaluate when I start the hands-on evaluation. So before you ever even touch a patient, you should have an idea through what you're seeing and through what you're hearing from the animal owner. Okay, this is what I'm hearing. This is what I'm seeing. This is what I think I need to go check when I put my hands on the patient. So it's more efficient, because you're able to really nail down these are certain areas. But beyond just, you know, your hands finding these areas, there have been times where I have seen things and I've heard things and it didn't match the patient in front of me. Like, I had this little Jack Russell Terrier patient, and I was at a dog show, and the owner was walking her for me, and this dog was repeatedly lame on the right front leg. It was like holding the leg up. It was hopping on three legs. And everything she told me said, it's a front leg, it's a front leg, it's a front leg. And then I started to evaluate this patient, and I couldn't find anything wrong with the areas that I thought it would be. So in a forelimb lameness, for example, I'm hearing from the owner, okay, you know, they're three-legged lame, hopping on that right front. I won't put any pressure on it when they're standing. I'm seeing them lift their head with a head bob when they try and put it down. And then I'm thinking in my mind's eye, okay, I need to check the neck. I need to check the shoulder. Maybe I need to check the elbow, the mid-back. I'm thinking through these areas. And then I go and I check these areas, and the dog has nothing wrong in any of those areas. So it's one of those things where sometimes you get some head scratchers where you're like, this doesn't make any sense, right? So beyond the systematic evaluation, I'm going to talk about, okay, once you put hands on a patient, here's how to evaluate for compensations. Because all the time, you will find a pet, the owner will tell you their problem's here, and then you'll go to palpate, and the problem's not even close to that. So really good example, a lot of dogs with hip and knee complaints, I will find that they will have pain in their mid-back. I don't know why, but I will continually be adjusting the thoracic spine, and it won't get better, and I'm scratching my head because I'm like, you know, why does this keep popping up, right? And it's because I haven't fully addressed the problems in the hind end. And that was the case in this Jack Russell unique presentation. She was lumping on the forehand, and she actually had a problem in her hind end. It actually happened to be patellar instability, and the muscles were all bound up through the psoas, the quad. And once we released that, adjusted the pelvis, the hip, the forelimb lameness went away. And it was bizarre, right? But because I followed my intuition, I knew these compensation patterns. Okay, if we have a forelimb lameness, these muscles attach here, and following the chains, right? Because these muscles, they don't interact just, you know, one muscle at a time. It's not just like, okay, the biceps attach here. When the origin and insertion come closer together, it flexes the arm in humans, right? Flexes that joint in the dog, right? Because flexion and extension are cords. Anyway, so the biceps, when you're bringing origin and insertion closer together, does this motion. But beyond the biceps, what attaches past there? Because there's this thing called fascia, right? And fascia is, you know, a fad right now. Fascia is fad. But the fascia is like the spiderweb coating that goes around these muscles. And it interconnects everything. And it attaches the bicep to the shoulder, to the back, down into the knees. And it kind of like wraps the body all together into this spiderweb where things are interconnected. And it has some unique properties where kind of like Wolf's Law, you know, how bones change based upon the forces placed upon it. Well, fascia is similar in that it will derange itself and change itself based upon the forces placed upon it and the stresses placed upon it. And most people think, oh, you know, fascia rips and tears. It's actually very resilient, very stretchy, and sometimes very dense, depending, like the IT band, for example, is very dense. But this material is fairly resilient and it responds to vibration. So vibration, I like to think of like a spider web. There's a spider and then, you know, a fly hits their web and they can feel that vibration. And then the web automatically is deranged based upon the fly going into the web. But then the spider can feel a vibration and target that area, right? Well, you know, the fascia is similar to that in that it's responsive to vibration. It can change to be more like a solid, to more of a gel based upon, you know, the forces placed upon it. And it also has 3 times the amount of receptors that muscles do. So that way it can sense pain more than muscles. So a lot of times with human patients, when they'll come in, you'll ask where it hurts and they'll gesture to a big wide area, like their entire back part of their leg or something like that. It's not just pinpoint. It's not just this muscle here. It's the whole thing hurts. And that's because fascia, since it's so sensitive, it provides 3 times the amount of information. It helps the brain have a map of where our body is. So it helps in the awareness. So, and this is basically me ranting and going on like a tangential bunny trail, but fascia is so important because if we don't look downstream or upstream and we keep adjusting the same things, then I'm not doing or rendering the best care possible for my patient. And I can adjust T6 every single time and not get that patient well. I'm going to repeat that. You can adjust T6 every time and it's not going to get your patient well. You won't see measurable improvement if you're not finding the true culprit that is causing that pattern, because it might not be the primary problem. It might be a secondary problem. I had someone describe to me once, like 2 toddlers in a car, the one screaming isn't always the one that caused the problem. That stuck with me because it's so true that in our body, we adapt and our fascia is always remodeling itself and always putting slight tension in certain areas. And we think like, yes, it's going to rip or tear in acute injury, but in chronic compensation cases, it's actually folding and melting together and getting tangled. And I actually burned my fingers off because I have a visual aid, but I made these little fascial models where I put this glue along these fibers to show you that when fascia gets stuck together, the areas around it move more. And when you try and pull and get glide and elastic tendencies out of the areas that are pressed together, it's stuck. And we can think if we have abnormal tension on these fascial fibers that are encasing these muscles or are attached to these fascial slings, then we don't have proper tone or elasticity in the musculoskeletal system. So that's going to create rigidity, which is going to create fixation, which is going to create subluxation, right? Or whatever chicken or the egg domino you like to use. It's a different way of thinking. It's not this bone is stuck. It is this fascia isn't moving correctly, which is causing this restriction, which is causing this movement pattern, which is causing the presentation that we're seeing. So how do we find that in a nonverbal patient is the question. So there are several gems that I have found through a systematic gait evaluation, through knowing my anatomy, and knowing where to put my hands and knowing these fascial planes and these fascial sling systems, which, you know, fascia is a new fad, right? So knowing these different slings and how they interrelate to one another, so that way I can check upstream and downstream and make sure that I am doing my job properly and evaluating the whole system. Because bones don't exist in a vacuum. Muscles don't exist in a vacuum. Muscles, joints, bones, and fascia are all interconnected. And they also relate to other structures, such as the GI system. You know, the skin, the integumentary system has fascia. Like, all these different systems rely upon proper tone in order to be functioning correctly. If you have too much tension in the fascia, you have too much tension on the joints, on the nerves, and on the rest of it. So what we're going to be talking about during my talk is about this topic, is how to really identify in your canine patients, if you're adjusting the same thing over and over again, why are you doing it? Because these things present similarly. And this is not like, I don't have a bunch of research studies. I have a couple that I'm going to present on, but I don't have like a, you know, this case manifests as, it's not cookie cutter, but there are several patterns that I've noticed being down in the trenches working on patients that, you know, this hind end problem, I keep adjusting the T-spine and that's because I hadn't properly addressed the knee or the hip. Or, you know, this dog with a neck problem, I'm not properly addressing the shoulder and the elbow. And to me, it's second nature now when I'm, you know, motion palpating, I go to these areas that are connected. So say, for example, you know, I'm working on a dog's neck and I want to make sure that it's the neck. Well, I'll also check the shoulder, the scapula, the elbow, and the thoracic spine, as well as the upper rib cage, and checking and say, okay, what muscles are tight here? What fascia is tight here? Am I getting heat, swelling, edema? Do I have decreased range of motion? I follow these several different check marks where I, you know, I'm really in, really out certain things based upon what I'm feeling. So I'm going down the list, I'm checking certain things. It's kind of like a diagnostic, if you will, but for the musculoskeletal system. I know a lot of people are like, oh, wow, that was a long rant. And, you know, but really, chiropractic is not just we motion palpate and wham, bam, thank you, ma'am. It's not just we palpate and we adjust. It should be an all-encompassing visit where you are diagnostically looking through these different systems, ruling in, ruling out certain areas of dysfunction. Not saying you're diagnosing, but just dysfunction. Is this functioning correctly? Yes. Okay, what's the next thing that connects that? Is that functioning correctly? How can I assess this muscle? How can I assess this joint? How can I assess this tissue? How can I make sure that it's not painful or restricted and make sure it's gliding appropriately? There are several different check marks you can go through, and not all of them involve your hands, right? Some of them involve your eyeballs and your hearing holes, your ears, right? To make sure that we're hearing things appropriately. And it's especially important in a nonverbal patient, such as a dog, horses, or cats, or things like that, that we really pay attention and we don't talk, we observe to the best of our ability. And we have a systematic way of checking things to make sure that we're enabling this animal patient to get the very best adjustment or treatment with us. And I hope you join me. I'm going to try and make it as interesting and as engaging as possible. Again, if you can't be with us, I understand. They gave me the last spot. I understand you may have to get back to your flight to get home. But I will be recording this. And it's also going to tie very nicely into my clinical essentials course that I'm making, where how do I do an evaluation? How do I palpate these areas to rule and rule out dysfunction? And how do I know where to adjust, really? Beyond just motion palpation, there are other things I need to check to make sure that these areas are functioning appropriately. So I hope you can join us. The conference is in November, the 9th, 10th, and 11th. And I will be there on Sunday with my talk. But I really would love for you guys to come to the whole conference, because we are doing an informal get-together on Friday evening. If you would like to sign up and join us at that informal get together, it's at a restaurant nearby. I have a sign up sheet that I'm going to post in the show notes and in my newsletter. I would love to have you there. We have a maximum of 24 people that we can have, minimum of 12. So first come, first serve, 24 people. We hope you can join us for the ABCA conference this year. Hope you can join me in my talk. But if you have any questions, feel free to reach out. While I have you, please leave us a like, a share, a review. Join us on our Facebook community, Making Strides for Animal Chiropractic. And you guys, I'm just a human being. I want to know what you need as you're growing your practice. So feel free to drop me a message or reach out. I'm just a person. I would love to connect with you. So until next time, we will talk soon. Thanks for tuning into the podcast. I hope these free tools have served you and your business so you can serve more patients. It's really tough being an animal chiropractor. I know it. You're trying to meet all these people, trying to get their vet to sign these referral forms, and you don't know if you can make your business work financially. It's hard. I get it. Now, when I first got started, all of my chiropractic mentors told me you have to do all these marketing events, meet all these people you don't know, shake a lot of hands, and get them into your practice. I was always wondering where my next new patient was going to come from. And if I'm being honest with you all, it wasn't sustainable. It always put fear in my head that I would never have a practice of my dreams. So fast forward a couple years, and here I am with a successful and thriving animal chiropractic practice. And it took a lot of mindset shifts in order to get here. What I thought and what I was told would work didn't work for me. So I had to develop a program that worked for a strongly introverted, kind of awkward person who just loves animals and wants to serve them well. I had to shift away from always thinking about where I'm going to get my new patients in to instead focusing on the relationships I built in my community and becoming an authority figure on animal chiropractic. So you guys, I have a free course that's going to tell you a little bit more about how I made these mindset shifts and why I started this Making Strides movement. So that way we can push the animal chiropractic profession forward. Please join us on makingstridesforanimalchiropractic.com. Take the free course and see what it has to offer you. Hey guys, Dr. Katie here. Thanks for listening. My intention behind starting this podcast was to build awareness and promote our amazing profession. If you like what we're doing here, please like, share, or leave a review. Help us to spread this movement so we all can begin to take steps towards change. Let's make strides for animal chiropractic.